I would like to talk about the series of works that is exhibited in Wilfried Lenz's gallery here at the fair, as Mariano also mentioned. And this installation is based on a trilogy. Trilogy is really new. I like it. a trilogy which I have just concluded with my latest work, which is called Betty and Daisy, as Max mentioned. Which had this first presentation about 3 weeks ago in the film festival in Rotterdam. So the installation, I just want to explain, the installation here is composed around one work that we show in its proper size and qualities. And the other works function as references, both to my own works and to a film by Brazilian filmmaker Glauber Rocha. The film that we are referring to here in this stand is a film dated 1968-1972 called Cancer. I would like to come back to this a bit later. I say references because the other works that are in the stand are not the works themselves, but they are documents coming from works. So of the other three works that are represented there, two are actually, they have the form of an analog slide projection, which was simply not very easy to show in such a situation. And the third one is the Betty and Daisy film, which is actually a cinematic film and will be shown in under those conditions. But also we have a third reference, and that is that all these documents are placed inside another, let's say, document, but it's a structure, which is the exhibition structure, which is again a reference to an exhibition structure by the Italian-Brazilian architect Lina Bobardi, that also was just mentioned, on whom I did some work before, let's say. And it was a structure for an exhibition that she once showed in Salvador de Bahia, but then it was supposed to travel to Rome. And as it was built up there already in the Galleria di Arte Moderna, let me just check, Galleria Nazionale di Arte Moderna in Roma, it was supposed to show a show that was called Civilization of the Northeast, and that exhibition showed objects that were the objects and photographs from a popular culture of the very poor and neglected northeastern region of Brazil, which she, Lina Bobardi, acknowledged to be a sophisticated aesthetic expression and invention, or inventions and expressions, these objects. But what is interesting about this story is that this exhibition, which was already installed, was on the eve of its inauguration actually prohibited and never opened. It was prohibited by the Embassy of Brazil. It is 1964, and Brazil has then just been taken over by a military regime, and they found the exhibition subversive. So it just goes to show what subversive can mean. But it also sort of gave me an interesting acknowledgement of this structure, because it's actually interesting that she made a structure that holds objects which she recognized as being something that you could show in an art situation, but they come from a popular culture. And the establishment does not recognize it as such, and stronger still, they actually prohibit it to be exhibited as something that is Brazilian culture. So that's so far about the whole structure of the show. But let me tell you something about this trilogy. It has actually four pieces. The fourth piece is an entr'acte called Supposing I Love You and You Also Love Me, which dates 2011. I started this series in 2009 with a work called Après la reprise, La Prise. This work, in this work I wanted to reflect on a few questions around work, women, new forms of collectivity, and the idea of the public voice, and all this in relation to cultural production, in which what I would be doing is implicated as well. So this work, which is filmed in a one-day shoot, which is normally my way of working, and in collaboration with people that I called to do this with me, eventually became a 60-minute edit of analog slides and a soundtrack. And this was followed by another slide installation piece the next year that is called Pertinho de Alphaville, that was shot and first shown in São Paulo. And it circles around the same questions, but then I shot it in Brazil and against the backdrop of a very specific and geographical history that is there of labor movements and cultural production there in Brazil. and how, and this work actually now ended up in this latest work, which is called Betty and Daisy, which is a meeting between two women, Betty and Daisy, who themselves have a very strong role in two different forms of popular culture, and both have a relationship to the public and political voice, but in very, very different ways. Betty Mendes is an actress of novella, telenovelas in Brazil, and besides that, she's an activist, or has been an activist in the 60s, and in the late 70s, again, very active politically in these labor movements, and even in the formation of the Labor Party, the PT, and was even after that active as a member of the National Senate. But I'll come back to that later. And Daisy, by the way, is a funk singer, a funky favela, which is something called baile funk, a very, very rough form of a certain form of hip-hop. Again, then you will see some of these examples later. But I wanted to start with two historical references, or one actually to start with, to introduce some of the ideas that are running through all of these works. And both my historical references that I show today are from 1968, a year that sounds so magically revolutionary. First of all, this is a short film, which I found along all of my travels when I was making Après la reprise, La prise. And this work is called La reprise, so you can also see that my title has some connection to that. It's this work here. It was a short film. The whole title is La reprise du travail au usine Wanda, the return to work in the Wanda factories. It was a short film from 1968 itself, shot by students of the Institute of des Hautes Études Cinématographiques in Paris, where a strike had been organized as well, a strike like everywhere else in France at the time. A small crew had taken out a camera and one roll of film and gone to the Wanda factory in Saint-Ouen, which produced batteries. And the workers had been on strike 2 weeks. And now, the moment that they arrived there, they've actually just compromised all of their issues and they're about to go back to work. So when the students arrived, people are standing outside the factory and they're about to resume their work. However, the camera focuses on the discussing crowd, but lingers on a young woman who refuses to go back into the factory. I'd like to show you that part of the film. The film is 10 minutes because it's just the length of the roll of film. This film was actually shot as part of a longer film, but never used as such, and has therefore become gotten a life of its own. And it has actually gained some cult status because of that. So basically, it was just shot as it is, no montage, 10 minutes roll of film. When it finished, it finished. I'll just show you 5 minutes of it with English subtitles. Okay, stop there. This film is that it became a cult example of film in filmmaker circles as an example of how cinema could possibly relate to reality and to militancy and perhaps truth. The woman at the epicenter, a figure who embodies the idea of change and the fight for this change, is both a character of political fiction and yet at the same time completely real. With her looks and on-camera presence, she also relates to the female presence in the cinema of the epoch. She disappears when the camera turns back to the crowd, which is now slowly making its way back into the factory. There's nice shots actually of all these bags going into the... So you see everybody returning into the factory. Through the narrow doorway, joined together with the cinematic appearance and the actualization of her presence, being woman, being part of an exploited group and refusing that part, comes her disappearance. I would like to show you now a piece of another, this is a work of mine, which I made. So let's say this film came along in the research that I was doing for this piece. It was not my prime sort of beginning or something, but in Après la reprise, La prise, which was the title which was later given to this piece, I actually found a really interesting story with some women who had been fired from the Levi's factories in the northern France and southern Belgium, actually very related to what Guatemoc was just talking about. Of course, the deindustrialization of Europe affecting groups of people, and very lately so, in the late 90s, affected a very large group of women who were working in these jeans factories. I had a personal memory of seeing this happen in the late 90s when I was living in Belgium. And one of the women who was leading the union at the time was always on television and had an immense belief in that they could actually win the fight. So they had a collective fight still from this being all together in this job. There were about 500 women in the factory. And they held out for about half a year, keeping the factory open under really quite harsh conditions, and also offering, let's say, up to 10% of their pay as a negotiation. So I found this quite an interesting story, and was wondering really, because my interest was, how did these forms of resistance and forms of fight change today, when the conditions of work are so different, and when there is no more industry and no Fordist model to work with. So let's say that the people don't sit together in a room, but they would have a very different way of being together. And to work this question out, I invited some of these women. Actually, an in-between story is that about five of these women, of this very large group that was fired, actually became actresses. First of all, in a play that was about their story, and later they continued with the same director. So there was a nice link already to another form of work, namely this cultural work, which is, let's say, self-employed or precaire, as we also say. And also I could ask them easily to come and join me in the project, because they were already actresses, so I could sort of ask them to be actresses with me. And I invited them to come into a school in Belgium, where there was a group of young students, young students, let's say around 15, 16, who were in a school leading to the practical professions. And in another world, this group, I think this was a group out of a strata of society that otherwise would lead into the factories as a work that they could possibly do, but now no longer. So I was quite interested in this group particularly, and the meeting of these women with them. And this is what I set up for our day, and we filmed it several scenes. I will show you 5 minutes of the beginning of the edit, which is, as I said, a slight projection with a running soundtrack, and the subtitles are projected underneath the slide projection. In for articulate, you have to articulate, talk. So this is indeed what the women sort of envision. And I wanted to move directly to show you the beginning part of Cancer, a film by Glauber Rocha that I also show in the stand as a reference to my work. But it's like a sort of a literal reference or a footnote, let's say. But just to give you a little bit of background on what this is, Glauber Rocha is a Brazilian filmmaker who lived from 1939 to 1981. And he was one of the, let's say, most visible members of a group of filmmakers who've called their production Cinema Novo. And they, as a group, they were really determined to become part of a national debate involving aesthetics and politics. So their commitment was to make new aesthetic proposals as part of the national debate. So their belief, what I actually take as a very nice inspiration, let's say, is that their belief was that you can enter into the debate with aesthetic proposals rather than just like entering with verbal or discursive proposals as such. And part of that practice was, of course, innovation and experimentation, which they, especially Glauber Rocha, very much does also on the level of the narrative. So just to quickly show you a little bit of the beginning, what I find interesting here, which kind of relates to another part of the practice as well, is that he starts the film with a voiceover of the credits, which is this film is made in 1968 as well. And there are two things to say about that. One is that it is an interesting way to make the opening credits. It's kind of a very active, activating way to open it. And the second is that what he does, he kind of starts to talk about what the film is going to do, what the film is, how he's come to make this film. So it's kind of self-referential in the right in the beginning. Just to give you a little bit of background as well, what Glauber Rocha said about this film is that this film tells no story. we just see three persons inside a violent action. I was searching for a technical experience concerning the problem of resistance of duration of the cinematographic take. Here you can see how the technique intervenes in the cinematographic process. I decided to make a film where each take would last one roll of film and to study the almost elimination of the montage when verbal and psychological actions exist inside the same take. So there was a very strong concept that ran through the film, that every shot is just one take of a scene that is improvised. Because the actors that are involved, they improvise everything. And every time they're involved in a situation of psychological, sexual, and racial violence for almost 90 minutes, like a length of a feature film. The actors that you see in this film are actually actors with whom he was going to make another feature film just after, called Antonio das Mortes. But I think I will not go into all of this, but I wanted to show you this opening sequence also because it refers very strongly to the moment of the 68, which in the Brazilian context has a slightly different connotation than it had in the Paris context, apart from it also being a moment of strikes and demonstrations. It was also a tightening of the military regime, a hardening of the repression and the censorship. So it was actually a moment in which everything got more clamped down than it already was since 1964. And he's commenting on this and on who is fighting in this, and you'll see. You can hear him alluding to the cultural middle class as well as the workers in the same year, 1968. And it's this year of chaos and strikes. What is also interesting to me is that he shows this sort of moment of reality that is part of the moment in which there is a struggle between like intellectual class, middle class, and the workers' struggle as well. So there's a relation between them, and he shows this museum moment that is filmed in the museum, and you see even the actors sitting in the audience of that debate. And the actors that you're going to see later in this film, I will just give you a small example, actually, just for you not to think that the film looks like that, because there's a beautiful scene here, that is very beautiful improvised scenes, which is very much cinematic, but you see all the time, for instance, the actors, you see them looking at somewhere next to the camera to check with Clava, is it like this that you want us to do it? Because he just keeps on filming everything. But I'll just show you a small beginning fragment of the work that I mentioned as being the entr'acte of the trilogy, which is called Supposing I Love You and You Also Love Me, where I invited the same students that I had been working with in the Après la Reprise, only it was 2 years later. And I brought them into relationship with a completely different situation and another setup for the film as well. But in this, the situation in which was proposed as a meeting point was with Tariq Ramadan, who is an Egyptian-Swiss philosopher and theologist. And I was exploring the place of the multitude of voices in society and the place of fear. As a relationship to what I just showed you here is, this idea is indeed around where the voice is and also how this relationship is between the reality of the people that are shown on film and the reality of a fiction, not a fiction, but of the cinematic reality, let's say. So I'll just show you how I worked with that, which is again a slideshow, but it's this time it's digital slides. I'm just going to show you the beginning part. As you can see, the idea of the 1960s is again introduced by a completely different angle, namely also by the background of this architecture that is functioning as a player in the piece. And this is a particular architecture of the 1960s in the Netherlands that is an expression of ideals of that moment, ideals of unification, openness, democracy, as the young boy is reading there. But I put it as a backdrop actually to, let's say, changed values, or at least questioning these values, because they seem to be challenged by the everyday reality of the ununifiable multitude of interests that is so much more present nowadays. And so that's like part of the structure how I set up this piece. I will not say much more about it because all of these pieces have incredible stories to tell, but I think time is a little bit short for that. But what is introduced now is these two moments. So we have this moment of the 60s and its particular way of struggle and fight and change. And maybe we have the moment now that I try to look at what are possible what are possibilities to affect change or to think about the way things could change. And actually, the last work that I made is connecting more to making these two moments visible, which is this piece called Betty and Daisy, because actually also in Après la Reprise, I have to say, there are these two moments present, because on the one hand, there is the moment of the ladies who have there still the connection to collectivity as a way to resist, to speak with one voice with many. And the young people have no longer a relationship to that. They don't speak with one voice, they speak with many voices. And this is actually, I put that also as part of the structure, that you every time, as we saw in the fragment, you go back to them as a group that just babbles, that has many, many voices, but they don't speak together, but at the same time, they have another form of presence that is very much physical and that is much more, maybe much more bodily there. The presence is definitely there, and there seems to be a reliance on that as well. So I asked these two women to come together, Bette Mendes, as I said, novella actress of a generation that is, she's now 61, and she fought in these more collective struggles, let's say, and Daisy Tigrona, who is a much younger player, she's about 30, and she is now part of more like, she's not part of a movement, but she's a singer that comes from a particular background and has, I think her relationship to the idea of the political is much more inherited in herself, in what she does. She doesn't have an idea of representing something. So there are these two attitudes, and yet they overlap, but you see also how far they move apart from each other. And these are kind of things that are between generations and between backgrounds, class, and I think it became quite an issue in the whole piece. So I'll show you two clips of that, beginning with. Okay, I tried in this somewhat maybe unappropriate area to link a few things that not only link my works, but also link sort of works to ideas that have been floating around, not only in maybe art and cinema, but obviously also in political thinking, and how I try to activate them, or how I try to work with them by making them active in, so let's say, finding situations, finding people that then bring the script to my, bring the script to me, and I work it so that it has a sound, let's say. I wanted to stop there, and I...